Life Audio.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations.
We want families to come here and gain insightful strategies that empower them to successfully teach diverse learners at home.
Hosted by founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool, Peggy Ployer.
Our goal is that these powerful weekly conversations will boost your confidence to cultivate the best at-home learning environment for your student.
For more homeschool resources, go to spedhomeschool.com. You're listening to Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer. We'll start the conversation with Peggy and her guests next.
Is it hard to spark meaningful conversations with your kids? Whether you're a homeschool hero, planning activities for the next family vacation, or simply gathering around the dinner table, we've got something that can help. Introducing the Daily Family Conversation Starter by best-selling author Katie Clemens. This remarkable book offers 365 imaginative ways to connect with your children in just 5 minutes each day, with prompts like, "Who made you laugh today?" or "What would you do if you had a tail?" These simple questions open up a world of laughter, curiosity, and deeper connections. From dinner time to sleepy time, the Daily Family Conversation Starter is your key to creating memories that will last a lifetime. Don't wait to transform your family's daily routine into an adventure of discovery and fun. Grab your copy of the Daily Family Conversation Starter today, wherever books are sold.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with the King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool, a nonprofit that empowers families to home educate diverse learners. To learn more, visit spedhomeschool.com. Here's Peggy Ployer.
Today, we are going to talk about the intimate connection between mental health and learning disabilities. And my guest today is Shelley Woon. Shelley is a passionate educator who brings a solution-focused and collaborative perspective to each situation, which is informed by her 30-plus years of engaging with students, families, and community partners. She values the brain-learning connection and is eager to assist others in developing an understanding of a neuroplastic approach to unlocking potential, potentially for those struggling with learning difficulties, or particularly. She is thrilled to be an integral part of the dynamic and innovative Aerosmith community. In the key role of head of school, she holds a master's in education and leadership and a supervisory officer and principal qualifications, along with specialists in special education and reading. Welcome to the show, Shelley. I am so excited to have you here today and to talk about this really important subject.
Thanks, Peggy. It's great to be here, that it is definitely a subject that's passionate to me.
Yeah. Usually I have my guests start out talking about that. Why it's so important, especially from their perspective, and just a little bit more background about you. And, you know, with that much education experience, I'm assuming you've seen a lot and you've heard a lot from families. And so you have all this experience you're bringing into this conversation. And I would just love for our audience to get to know you a little bit better and some of that background.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Peggy. Mm-hmm. I think that some of my experience specific to learning disabilities and mental health actually began in my own home, that my brother, who is 2 years older than me, really struggled to learn. And by the time we were in grade six, we were actually in the same grade together. People thought we were twins going forward from then. And just watching, you know, how talented and creative he was in so many ways, but his difficulty with learning and how that unfolded in our home, and the dreaded report card days, and the toll all of that took on his self-esteem over time. And so I think that's where really my interest in special education began. And Yeah. And then just in my various roles throughout my career, you know, within my own classroom initially, and then as a district principal, and then as a superintendent of special education and a couple of different boards. Just looking at the challenges and the, you know, the number of children who weren't able to come to school because their mental health was really getting in the way of that, that, you know, it started off, you know, they all arrived at school wanting to do the best they could. And some of the hurdles that they met along the way really got in the way of them feeling good about themselves, and it led to compromised well-being. So just working with families, and in the last number of years in my career, there was a lot of emphasis on mental health and partnerships between school boards and community partners. And so, so that also opened up a lot of opportunity for learning and thinking about these topics in different ways. And then certainly when I became familiar with Barbara's work, and then now working for her, you know, just seeing some of our families, where the children are coming to us from and what's happening for them as a family, a lot of insights, and then opportunity to make a difference across all those various years and situations. So that's my background.
Can you talk a little bit about Barbara's work, because maybe a lot of people aren't familiar with that, and how that's connected with the school that you are head of?
Sure. So Barbara's work really began with her own life story and challenges. And she was an individual who struggled to learn. And, you know, in grade one, her classroom teacher shared that, you know, that she might not really amount to much in life because of her struggles, and that she really had a block toward learning. And Barbara, as a, you know, a young child, pictured that she actually had a block in her head. But some of Barbara's strengths really allowed her to push through. And while doing her own education in psychology in the post-secondary system, that she became aware of situations where the brain showed potential for change, whether it was with rats or whether it was with individuals who had had traumatic brain injuries. And so she explored this type of work, and then started to think about what she could do to address the types of needs she was presenting with. And so she developed one of her exercises called Symbol Relations. We also refer to it as clocks within our school. But this really started unpacking and addressing some of Barbara's own needs. And it's really rooted in the neuroplasticity of the brain. And so targeting specific cognitive functions, and after helping herself, she began to try to understand other people's learning difficulties and addressed others' needs through creating some exercises that targeted different cognitive functions than maybe where her own learning challenges had existed. And so gradually, like, our school's been going for over 40 years, and so Barbara was a real pioneer in neuroplasticity of the brain, that that way ahead of her time.
Definitely. So that gives parents a lot of hope. They're listening and they have a child who's struggling, just that the brain isn't stuck where it is right now. It can change. And I know that a lot of times we feel like this is what we're stuck with. You know, our child can't move past this, that it's just too hard, that they have their label and that's what they're stuck with. Now we've got to try to figure out how to work around it. But the potential of change in the brain, and the change in wiring, is like you said, it started, I mean, people started talking about it because long ago they said, well, this is your track now. but that's no longer, the case, that, or the viewpoint that majority of people that really work in this field understand now.
Yeah, we went through, even throughout my educational career, you know, there was a time where, yes, this is what you have, this is how you, this is what you're going to be able to do, and these are your limitations. And then mm-hmm. there was, you know, a lot of shift toward understanding the learner through different strengths, and then making sure that your full approach was addressing learning through whatever style of learner they happen to be. And then I think in the last number of years of my educational career, a lot of it was around accommodations and modifications. So lowering expectations, which then led to huge gaps and those individuals then being limited to in their post-secondary opportunities and workplace opportunities. And so, but with Barbara's work, it is about literally addressing the concern head on, right in the brain.
So, I love it. Yeah. So when you were talking a while ago, you talked about the fact that mental health issues keep a lot of kids at home. And I think that is one of the things that we've seen growing in the homeschool community too, is that because kids have such a difficulty in getting to school, that parents are choosing homeschooling, but then they have this child that is dealing with so many mental health issues, they don't know how to approach the school. And so I know that there's a very large audience out there, parents who kind of feel stuck. And so if you're feeling that way, I want you to hold on for this conversation, because Shelley is going to talk a lot about that intimate connection about with that learning disability. Because I think, and have you seen that, which comes first? I know as I was thinking about this interview, I'm like, which comes first, the chicken or the egg, the learning disability or the mental health, which comes up first, or is it kind of in combination?
Yeah, that's, I think it is a tough question to answer. What I'm mainly going to be focusing on is where a learning disability exists, and then from that we end up seeing compromised mental health. And one of the things I like to think about is, and in helping people understand, is try to picture an adult that you've known who's been doing really well, and they seem to be on a trajectory where there isn't anything that they can't do. And then suddenly they start to present with some mental health difficulties, maybe right to the point where they're off work on a mental health leave. And I believe that all of us are positioned to be faced with the challenges of compromised mental health when the situational demands in front of us exceed our capacity. And so as adults, we might be faced with, you know, a workplace possibly where it's a toxic work environment, or the person who's leading us isn't leading us in a healthy way, or there's relationship challenges, or we have family members who have serious health conditions. And so all of that, here we were doing quite well, all of those demands compromises our well-being, and suddenly might be diagnosed, you know, with anxiety or depression, or, you know, some other type of mental health need. So then if we think about our little learners, you know, in many cases, whether it's, you know, sending them off to school or they're coming around our kitchen table to learn, and they've, you know, been superstars up till that point that we see them, they learn to walk, they learn to talk, and now we've got letters and numbers in front of them, and suddenly the demands that are in front of them are exceeding their capacity. And what that, the toll that takes over time. So, so something that's going on with them, and within Aerosmith, because we're really looking at the brain, that we would look at some one of the areas of cognitive functions needs strengthening, that it's weak and we need to build the cognitive function that's related to whatever it is that's getting in the way of them, of the child succeeding. In, you know, the traditional school system, we look at it at the surface and we see that they, you know, are struggling to read. But when we think about all the demands that are required when someone is learning to read, that it traces back to different parts of the brain. And so we try to tease out which function is required for this task. And if they're struggling, if this function requires further development, then it might show in a way where they're struggling to add, they're struggling to remember their letters, they're struggling to form sentences in a proper way. And all of that takes a toll when you just feel like it's kind of,
you just can't get over the hurdles. They just keep knocking down and you're doing everything you can and everything you got in you.
And then you're surrounded by people who maybe are doing well and it looks
right.
And so that chips away even more. And then what you're seeing other people do is far greater than what you're doing. And so that it just takes a toll and it erodes at a child's self-esteem and their sense of well-being.
After a word from our sponsor, we'll dive back into this conversation.
Is it hard to spark meaningful conversations with your kids? Whether you're a homeschool hero, planning activities for the next family vacation, or simply gathering around the dinner table, we've got something that can help. Introducing the Daily Family Conversation Starter by best-selling author Katie Clemens. This remarkable book offers 365 imaginative ways to connect with your children in just 5 minutes each day, with prompts like, "Who made you laugh today?" or "What would you do if you had a tail?" These simple questions open up a world of laughter, curiosity, and deeper connections. From dinner time to sleepy time, the Daily Family Conversation Starter is your key to creating memories that will last a lifetime. Don't wait to transform your family's daily routine into an adventure of discovery and fun. Grab your copy of the Daily Family Conversation Starter today, wherever books are sold.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool. Go to spedhomeschool.com to get resources and support for teaching your unique learner at home.
In general, you know, what, as far as we're looking at the bigger mental health picture, is this a growing, I mean, it seems like it's a growing pandemic almost. I've been speaking on depression for years, and it just seems like every time I look up the new statistics, they're up again. And it's like, oh, I couldn't believe that. And especially the kids are getting younger.
Yeah.
Is that just a continuing growth?
Yeah, that, you know, it's when you think about all the things that we're faced with in our lives and how much more complex our lives are, and the demands on everyone in our family, and the everything that people are juggling, and our children are living that, and many of our adults are living that, and so kids are experiencing that and feeling stress within their home. And when we unpack some of these situations, it's logical. Like, to think that you wouldn't feel a bit of anxiety might seem unusual than that you do. And so I do believe that, you know, there's lots of factors, and the area where we really try to focus on is around learning disabilities. Now, we do have individuals who are struggling with some mental health needs, and if they aren't attending our program full time and they aren't doing a Aerosmith cognitive assessment, we typically would encourage them to do our symbol relations cognitive exercise, because it's one of the most powerful exercises, and it's the one that I was referencing earlier about Barbara developing to address some of her own needs. And it helps you process information. It helps you comprehend information. It helps you make connections across different situations and learn from prior situations. You know, it's a fast-paced world that we're living in. And when we think about the volume of work that's in front of us, whether we're a student or an adult working or just someone trying to stay on top of our social media and emails, it's a lot that we're trying to take in. If we're struggling to do that in any way, we're struggling to process what we're reading, or we're struggling to decode the text, that all of that can take a toll. And many adults are living with those difficulties. They've just gone through a school system where they were accommodated and things were modified, not that that their learning needs were really fully addressed and met.
Exactly.
And they're carrying those challenges forward.
So you listed off a few things. What are the big ones that, because I know we think of more diagnoses than think of like these different things that are kind of like the underlying factors that you kind of alluded to earlier. Difficulties that so what are they, and how do we look at this differently? I mean, that's I think probably the most important thing is we do need to change our mindset. Is that correct? On how we look at when a child struggles?
We absolutely do need to look at it differently, because if we're looking at it at the surface and understanding it from the surface, the problem can look the same, whether it's someone's struggling to read, or they're struggling in math, or they seem to have memory difficulties, or they have anxiety. When we uncover it all, that the root is where we need to really find out what's at the root, and because that's really going to inform how we're going to address the concern. And so, that some of the big, even when a child is assessed, has a psychoeducational assessment, that we always hear, you know, difficulties like nonverbal learning difficulty, or they have a memory difficulty or processing speed or phonological awareness, or maybe they're even diagnosed with dyslexia or dyscalculia or dysgraphia, that they might, but all those words aren't about solutions, that they give us
exactly so true.
Even memory, that memory is complex, and depending on what it is that you're trying to recall, it may be a different cognitive function that is being drawn upon. And so with our the assessment that many of our students do allows us to be more specific about which exercise they're going to engage in, so that we can address their specific area of need, because that's the cognitive function that's getting in the way of them, you know, remembering the list of items that someone asked them to gather or said, do this, and this, and then meet me at the front door, or, you know, struggles to remember basic information, or it's all of those things draw upon a different cognitive function. So we want to discover which function is getting in the way of an individual achieving and meeting their potential. And so by addressing that cognitive function and programming specifically to it, then we are rewiring the brain and strengthening that function.
What kind of time frame do you see that a student, when you finally get to the point of, this is the struggle, and now we've got to start, you know, thinking about this differently and approaching it differently. What kind of time frame does it take to, and what does it affect too? Does it affect just first of all just the processing ability or the ability to do something, and then the mental health follows, or do you see kind of a progression in all areas just because achievement is being seen?
So, depending on the need, and everyone would have their own unique cognitive profile when, like if an individual does an assessment. So we assess around 19 different cognitive functions, and some of the functions we'll see more like the symbol relations cognitive function. Quite often someone who's experiencing a difficulty, we will see that come up as an area that needs some sort of support to address or strengthening. And when we are assessing the function, we're assessing them on a full continuum where someone might be average or someone might be severe or moderately severe or a mild moderate profile. And so depending on when we do the full assessment and we see your overall cognitive profile, that will inform how long we would predict that the individual may need to engage in the program. And that is one of the key things. They need to be engaging in the program.
None
of it happens through osmosis. That you need to engage in order to address and have neuroplastic change occur. So we may see a student who we'll say, your program, if you're engaging in it fully, would be a year, where we'll see some individuals where we'll say, you know, based on your results, it might be 3 to 5 years. And that is with that full engagement. Now, certainly, your well-being and your overall mental health can change the rate of that as well, because are you able to fully engage? We do have, you know, we will see families come forward where they do actually need to have some mental health treatment happening before we would recommend that they're engaging with us. And then we also have families where their child engages in our program and they actually do better in their treatment because they're able to engage in treatment at a deeper level. They are able to think more deeply. Yes. They're able to process themselves and the questions that are being asked of them. So it really does range. And how we are different than a lot of programs is that we aren't looking to have someone come to us at the age of 6 and stay with us until, you know, grade 12 or whatever, that we want to ideally get in there while a child's young, when the need is first being recognized before their mental health is severely compromised. Because the other thing where I was saying about, you know, them becoming aware of how they're different, peers become aware of how a child is different, or other family members might become aware, and you know, siblings that hopefully they're offering a loving home environment to their sibling, but they're not always the kindest or friendliest, or, you know, lots of times individuals with a learning disability struggle to understand jokes properly. So they can become the subject of a joke rather than really being there to appreciate a joke. All of these things take a toll on an individual's well-being. So we do want to capture them when they're young, but at the same time, like in our summer program, not this past summer, the one before, we had a 65-year-old woman attending our summer program, because our program is for children, youth, young adults, and adults and seniors. And so, you know, if a senior is feeling like they want to be working on their memory, then they, they're best to do an assessment so we can target which cognitive exercises, or our symbol relations cognitive exercise doesn't require an assessment. And so many adults, you know, want to improve their processing speed, their ability to comprehend and make connections. And so they will do, that exercise. Yeah.
Well, that's neat. Yes. There's so much involved in that. But yeah, for each person, it's an individual.
Yep. Absolutely.
It's an individual journey.
Yeah.
But yet the brain has plasticity and it can change. And that's the common denominator between all of it. And, and so, yes. So there is hope. I think we get stuck in the, you know, the mental health rabbit hole of, and then we feel like we've just added another thing onto a learning disability, where really, if we can, I mean, what you're talking about is that there's a solution to both, and they actually are interconnected.
Right.
And so once you start dealing with one, then the other is going to follow suit. Not completely. I mean, like you were talking about, mental health comes with a whole bag of things.
Yeah. And even like with the symbol relations cognitive exercise, that because it strengthens your ability to comprehend and process and make connections, that some individuals, when they're engaging in that, it can help them unpack or understand past trauma, which in itself can create a, you know, some feeling of unwellness, that they're suddenly processing that, hey, when this was happening to me, this is why it was happening, and I might not have experienced it in I might experience it more deeply now that I can process it more. And so we do recommend, if there's, you know, if there is compromised mental well-being or past trauma, that we do encourage families to also be you know, accessing mental health supports, and whether, you know, going to therapy or different types of groups that might support, or, and even within our own school, we use and encourage mindfulness a lot around just regulating and controlling your emotions, your, you know, breathing slowly, pausing, because with some of our kids, like self-regulation is quite an issue by the time that they come to us, that they, you know, can struggle to manage their emotions and don't have the tools that they might require.
Right. A lot of it is just, they go into safety mode, and those become habits that are just a way of life over time. And they do take time to change. And
absolutely.
And so, yes, I'm glad you brought that up, because they do go hand in hand so much. We had a question from a viewer that was kind of related to that, and I'd love to bring it up. Angela had asked, can you talk about autism anxiety connection and tools you'd like to use to build emotional awareness?
Yeah. So again, this is where we would really look at it from, it's anxiety that we name at the surface, and whether an individual is an individual with autism, or, you know, an individual with another type of learning need or mental health need, that we really want to determine which cognitive function might be at play here and getting in the way here. And so, like, we know that individuals on the spectrum can often be very detailed focused, and so they might be sensitive to changes in their routine, or some of the, you know, their sensory needs,
right,
and what's happening for them there, whether it's in their home setting or outside their home, the social situations, and understanding social rules and social norms, and the black and white thinking, and where do we see gray. So we really want to look at where the origins are of the problem that, like when, again, around the symbol relations, like making connections between situations. So rather than feeling that something is unpredictable, bringing the predictability to it, making the connection between something that's happened before and the likelihood that this is going to happen now. And so by engaging in that program, ideally, or exercise, ideally, your anxiety can be released reduced because you can recognize the connection between what I'm about to do and what I'm worried about and what has happened in past events and how ideally they unfolded in a positive way for me. Or for the social part, if someone has difficulty with like a nonverbal learning difficulty, we do have an exercise that really focuses on interpreting situations, really trying to figure out what's happening in the situation, the emotion of the people within the situation, what might have happened just before that, what might happen just after that, and really try to develop some of those nonverbal type of thinking skills and empathy. And then the symbolic thinking, cognitive function, just that ability to focus and attending to a task and persevering through it and being able to self-direct. So the anxiety on the surface looks this way.
Right.
But which of those, or is it all of those that are getting in the way? And that's the other thing too,
with
individuals on the spectrum, that we really, there are a lot of best practices that are known to support individuals with autism. And so we would encourage that you continue to use those strategies while you're working through the exercises. And what we also know is an individual with autism, by doing these exercises, it doesn't mean you're not going to have autism. What we might be able to do is strengthen some of the functions that are getting in the way, creating the anxiety, and hopefully reduce some of that. We have had many individuals with autism come through our school, or are, you know, at doing homeschooling, and they're doing some of our exercises during part of their day, and I've seen positive results.
That's awesome. Yes. I love how you broke that down, because we can look at the anxiety and we can say, okay, so here's what you can do about it. But really, it's getting to that root and learning just that association. It's learning, you know, the what was going on before, what was going after. I mean, those things tend to be blocked out for students who are very, you know, focused in the moment. And like you said, have all of those different sensory needs, everything with the nervous system, you know, is out of whack too. There's just so many things that we forget are going on, even as on the parent side. And of course the student side, they just know it's a mess. and they can't move beyond it. And so they shut down. Yep. And so being the one who's trying to help them, and I hope parents are hearing this, that there's more involved than just a quick tool or trick to put in place. It's going to take some work, but the work is well worth it, because you're coming from the bottom and you're working up, and you're going to see change. I know I've seen it in my own life. When my son was diagnosed, my mom looks at me and like, that's you. And worked through a lot of things I learned on this show that I've, you know, just myself, it helps improve, but you know, over time, those things, and you know, helping my kids with that, it's been amazing to see that change, and that change is possible. Like you said, the diagnosis doesn't go away, but you learn to understand it better, and then to work within it. So yeah, that's so much hope there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that is what we really want families to be realizing, is that there are answers and there are things that you can do. And it mm-hmm. won't be like our program is not a magic wand, right? It's that we really do need the individual to engage, that they need to be able to engage in the exercise for a sustained period of time. They need to be able mm-hmm. to move through challenge, you know, the work becomes more challenging, but it's not too challenging. It's just it's reachable. And then let's grab it, celebrate it, and then let's introduce the next challenge. And
I think you hit something on the head. And we a lot of times parents will come to us and say, "My child is not motivated." How do you approach something like this when you know that something change has to happen? Yeah. But to move the child in the same direction that you know they need to go in order for that motivation to actually increase.
Yeah. So with motivation, again, it's similar to what I would look at as it's motivation on the surface, just as anxiety on the surface. So so my first question would be is, when are they motivated, and where do we see them motivated, and then see if we can find any commonalities about, you know, around those activities, and then try to unpack where it does feel difficult and what is it about those difficulties. And of course, with our Aerosmith work, that we would want to look at the cognitive profile, do an assessment to see where some of those difficulties are. On our website, we actually have something called a cognitive questionnaire that can give some insights into a cognitive profile, where our assessment will go even deeper into that. But it would just start to give, if people answer all the questions, either about themselves, because we do support adults as well, or about their children, that it'll help give some sense of, oh, maybe it's this type of cognitive function, and we have lots of information about each function on the site where people will see, oh, yes, that's me, or yes, that's them. And it clearly shows what some of the difficulties might be, and what you would see if they're, you know, that function was targeted through some of the cognitive exercises. So,
yeah.
But so I don't know if I answered your motivation question well enough. It's the same as where we used to hear lazy, right? That so-and-so's lazy.
Right.
Well, let's understand what's getting in the way. I also really believe in Dr. Ross Green's work. I don't know if people are familiar with that, his collaborative and proactive solutions, where it's about understanding the perspective of the problem and understanding what's getting in the way, and believing that everyone, you know, we all would do well if we could. And so if someone isn't, what's getting in the way? And and we as adults apply our own theory about what's getting in the way, but if we hear it from the perspective of the child, we might find it something very different. So it's
absolutely
and I think, you know, both his work and our work go go hand in hand. And, you know, our students are here doing the work, but we're also working with them while they are managing a lot of lagging skills. And so how do we support them through the work and with those challenges? So I encourage his work as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I'll have to look that up. Dr. Ross Green, you said?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, his website's called Lives in the Balance.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to reference that as well. And Shelley's website is aerosmith.ca. I had it up on the screen, but if you're listening to the podcast, and we'll talk a little bit more of the school in just a minute here. But we did have one parent ask about motivation too, and how to figure out what kids are interested in when they're lacking motivation. So I think that the first thing is what Shelley just said, is you've got to figure out what's blocking the motivation. And then also find areas where they are already motivated. And then sometimes it's trial and error. I know for my kids, it's been a lot of that. You know, try something out. Are they motivated or are they not? And don't get too tightly wound around anything until you see that motivation pick up. And don't invest a lot of money in it either.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, we're all so wired differently. And, you know, those things that spark the brain to want to learn, to want to work are just very, very different. Yeah. And when you find those things, it's wonderful.
And I think that, like, with our kids who are struggling to learn, right? They've just reached, they hit so many felt like roadblocks, barriers, lack of success. And so that can really interfere with the motivation. I think that's partly, you know, why with our program, why we start out with a lot of success and then it gradually builds. And it's related to as well, building the brain, rewiring, but also just that sense of, okay, here's a task, I can engage, I can do it, I can master it. And so looking for ways to create some success, right? That's what we're we are motivated by, success, not all the challenges all the time, especially if we've if our self-esteem's been worn away. It's hard to feel like you're going to face the next failure. So what can we find that's going to promote some success?
Yes, absolutely. That's good. It's a good perspective to take on it. And because we as adults are not going to keep doing things we fail at. We have an out. But our kids, when they're going to school, they don't have an out. And we have to help them to find that success, to get to that place. And so taking it from that perspective, it really makes a lot of sense. So can you talk a little bit about the Aerosmith School? So it's aerosmith.ca, and you talked about some of the resources you have. Also, in the show notes, Shelley has an entire handout with a whole bunch more resources. I'm going to give you a link to that handout so you can download it right off of Google Docs, and you won't have to search for the link. It'll just be in the show notes. But what else? They can find that quick questionnaire and lots of information on the website. And so, just share with us what's on the website, but also services and things that your school offers.
Yeah. So if you go to aerosmith.ca, when you land in that spot, it'll really bring you to a part of the website that really speaks about Aerosmith and the Aerosmith program. And there are organizations all around the world that are utilizing Barbara's program. It's still all housed out of here, but different organizations offering it. So it will explain all about neuroplasticity. There'll be lots of research for people to check out if that's what they're interested in. It'll outline all of the cognitive functions, and I find them really fascinating to read about. And I love they are presented in a really simple way on the website. It's you can see the function, you can click on it, it'll tell you about what that function is related to, how it might present if there's difficulties, and what it might offer if it's enhanced. So you can really see yourself whether whether that might be the area where you have a need. We still do the assessment to figure out for sure what's going on. And then a part of it, you'll see a section where you can link to our school that really gives you a sense of what our overall school community is like. And so we offer programs or classes throughout the full day, right from 7:45 in the morning till 9 p.m. at night Eastern time. And this is so that individuals can join us, whether they're joining us for one period a day online or even coming in person. Our in-person is from 8:40 in the morning till 3:30 with a after school program that goes till 5:30. So people are joining us for either one period or two periods or all the way up to eight periods. And so it really goes in nicely with whatever other, whether you're attending a public school or whether you're doing a homeschooling program. Many of our families are doing their own homeschooling program and supplementing their program with our work. And some of them have in the end decided they're going to do us Aerosmith more intensively for a while to address some of those special education needs and then work more on the academic. When you're attending Aerosmith, we're not doing social studies and science. That we are really targeting the parts of the brain that you're using across subjects, across daily activities in your life. With our own school, students who are attending full-time do have English and math, but the others, they're coming in and doing the cognitive exercises that work for them. That they're in need of, and they are there is a classroom teacher there with them the whole time, and a nice feature is that we have, if a student's doing a program that is web-based, that the family can log in and see the child's performance and engagement on the screen as well, and so a real range, and how that's what we try to do is be accommodating to families and what their needs are and what their child's needs are. And adults. We have adults in our program as well. So and we have a couple of independent programs where for the symbol relations cognitive function and the motor symbol sequencing cognitive function, those exercises can be done without an assessment, but they can also be done on more of an independent schedule where we really want you to spend 4 hours a week on them, but you can figure out your own time for doing it.
Lots of different options.
And then you can link in with the teacher every week or every 2 weeks for 20 to 40 minutes in that type of model. A real range. And we have, like, with our, you know, I know this is for homeschooling, but with our school, we do go on outings, like our in-person school community goes on outings. We do the typical things like the Terry Fox run and, drives for the food bank and lots of fun stuff. A positive community and very neurodiverse population here. It's a fun place.
That's neat. Yeah, Shelley told me before the show that she came out of retirement to work at the school. And so that I can just tell by how you've talked about this program and just the lives that are changing, just how passionate you are about what the work that you're doing. And it's very exciting to hear about.
Barbara wrote a book. That's how I initially became aware of her back in 2012, the book, The Woman Who Changed Her Brain. And it gives insights into other individuals and their challenges and the work that she did to support them and the cognitive exercises that came out of them. And she's also being written about in other individuals' books, Norman Doidge, and Joe Bowler recently has included Barbara's work in her book. So yeah, it's it's great to see that more and more people are becoming aware of neuroplasticity and the ability for the brain to change. Because now when I say that, it feels like, well, why? How could they not? But there was a time where
there was a time. Exactly.
Yeah, I did not believe that. So
provides a lot of hope for a lot of our kids and a lot of us too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you for all that you've had to share today, Shelley. I am just so blessed by all that you have, the information you've given us, the hope that you've shared, and the resources that are available.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Peggy. No, it's been great to chat with you and share some things with your audience. And, you know, we have a great team here. If anyone has any questions, that please do reach out. You'll find some links on the website so you can access us really easily. Please do.
And that website again is aerosmith.ca. And I encourage you to just check it out. Even if it's just reading the information on the website, it's a lot of really good information there. So, but reach out if you feel like that this team could help you out and help your student out. So thank you again, Shelley. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
I'm going to let you go, but I have a couple other questions that came in from viewers. And so I'm going to answer those before I head out. So appreciate you, Shelley, and
Thanks, Peggy.
A good rest of your day and continue the amazing work. Bye. We had another question come in from a viewer, and I just want to encourage you, if you're a regular viewer of the show, we do send out an e-blast the night before asking for your questions, and more so we've been getting more questions that are not related to the topic, but just questions you want answered. And so we're changing kind of the format of the show just a little bit right now. It's going to change a lot coming up in a couple weeks. I'm actually adding 4 co-hosts. This is my little plug for that. And we're going to be hitting some hot topics. We're going to be kind of doing roundtable discussions, kind of like the Homeschool View version. It's going to be really fun. And it's guests that I've had on the show many times before that have been favorites. So you'll definitely want to hang on and join us as that transition happens. It's going to be super exciting. And that'll go onto the podcast as well. But the one question that came in that really wasn't specific to the topic and I really wanted to address came in from Courtney, and she said, what is the best Christian curriculum for struggling learners? And then the second half was, how do you grade high school if you don't do tests? First question, best curriculum. There isn't. Sorry. You can basically pick anything. If you are passionate as a parent about a curriculum, go with it. Because anything, even if it's made for a student with special needs, you're going to have to modify or accommodate it. You're going to have to change it to follow those specific interests of your child to increase that learning. Just like Shelley and I were talking about, you have to hit those points of where they're motivated and dig into that. So really pray about it. And for me, unit studies worked. For a lot of people, unit studies don't work. Some people love classical education, so they go with a classical approach. Some people prefer more of a Charlotte Mason approach. All of those, if you search around, have great curriculums. A lot of those people have been on my show that made those programs, or they have blogs on our website at spedhomeschool.com. So check those out. See what really resonates with you. Which person just has this educational philosophy that agrees with you? I mean, I've interviewed a lot of people and I think, you know, that's great for you, but I could not have made that happen in my house. Classical education is one of them. I just tend to be the type of person that I look at a recipe, see the ingredients and go, oh, good. And I close the book. So buying a curriculum that tells me what to do step by step just didn't work. It didn't mean that it wouldn't work for my child. It probably would have if I had been a parent who wanted to do that and that really fit with me. So make sure that when you pick a curriculum, it resonates with you first, because that is what's going to make you a better teacher. And then if you're looking for a curriculum that's Christian specific, make sure it aligns with your values, and go from there. And God will give you a piece about it. That's probably the biggest advice that I have for you. Second, how do you grade high school if you don't do tests? So I want you to familiarize yourself with what a rubric is. A rubric is something you set out previous to starting teaching a time period. So whether it's a class, whether it's a subject matter, and maybe you're going to teach that subject matter over multiple years. Develop a rubric, though. There's lots of free rubric generators out there. I think I even have connections. If you search rubric on the SPED homeschool website, you'll probably find my favorite on there. But just know that you set then ahead of time what you're going to give points for. And it doesn't have to be a test. It can be that they turned in their work, that they did this project and how much that project was worth, and each part of that project, how much points were given for each of that. So you basically break it down. And what's really good about this, if you have a struggling student, is that ahead of time, your child knows what they're going to be graded on. So my kids would take these rubrics and go, oh, if I don't write this long of a paper, then I'm only going to get this many points. But if I write this much, then I'll get this many points. And then, of course, there's the spelling and there's, you know, did you go through the process, and or did they show up with a happy attitude every day? You know, you can grade on those things. What is important to you? What is developing not only the learning skills in your child, but the character in your child? So think ahead of time about what you are going to give a grade on. Write it down. And then you've got a simple format, not only for grading, but your student knows what's expected also. So rubrics are amazing. So I would say dive into those as well. I got a comment. Well, I was talking with Shelley at Creative Minds Homeschooling, said I was able to watch today, live today. I am so excited. I haven't seen you in a long time. But I'm glad you were able to make the show today, especially today, because like I said, things are changing, formats changing a little bit. And so just super excited about where the show is going. And just thank all of you for joining me. Next episode, so next week, same time, same place, we are going to be talking about Sightful Learning, unveiling the impact of vision on student success. And so if you think, oh, my child has 20/20 vision, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about just how even like depth perception, other things that are related to sight, and how it affects learning. So we're going to have an expert on next week to talk a little bit about that, and just some things that maybe you aren't even catching, or none of the professionals have caught. And it might be leading to some struggles. Just like we were talking about with Shelley earlier, there's a lot of underlying things that we tend to slap labels on. And if we slap the label on, then we just put Band-Aids on and trying to fix that for our student instead of going deep underneath what's really going on that maybe has a much more global impact on your student than you realize. So addressing that, and I hope that you got a lot out of today's discussion. It's so important. Mental health issues are just increasing abundantly, and our kids are becoming more victims of things because of their self-esteem being low. And it doesn't matter where your child's in school or at home, it's across the board becoming more and more prevalent. So I'm glad we were able to address that issue today, and I'm glad that you joined us for this episode. So I will see you all next time here on Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Until then, take care and God bless. Love you, everybody. See you next time. Bye.
to take just a second to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on this podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you'll find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
This has been Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer.
Hello, my name's Rachel Carmen, and I want to invite you to come over and listen to my podcast. It's called Real Refreshment. For years and years as a young mother, I chased after the wind, thinking that the world could offer me the refreshment I longed for. But it was only when I discovered it in the person of Jesus Christ that I really found refreshment. Come on over and join me as we dig into Bible study. I'll see you there.